Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Ron Pannier. Unfortunately, my good buddy Kevin Luca will not be with me right now, but will join me later on in the show. But I am honored to welcome Lincoln Salt Dogs catcher Luke Roskam. Luke, thanks for joining me this week.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, Luke, let's just start with the most obvious question to ask you first. So, on the big 39-game consecutive game streak where you've reached base at least one time in every of those contests, tell me a little bit about how this streak is feeling for you right now.
Yeah, I'm just trying to stick to my approach. I mean, earlier in the season, I kind of struggled to start, and I think I was just trying to do too much, you know, getting in situations where I was just over-swinging instead of taking the situation as it comes. So I'm just trying to get into good counts and, you know, put good swings on balls, and also specifically taking my walks. Like, don't try to do too much. Don't try to be the hero. Let the guys behind me get me in, or, you know, just trust my teammates. But just don't try to do too much and be that hero that everyone wants to be.
You know, it seems that every night you're just finding pitches to wind up drive, or like you talked about, get on base. Do you feel something a little bit different right now when you're up at the plate, or you're just kind of going with the flow like you normally have gone?
I'm more like being a little more selective early in counts. I think I was just looking for a general area at the beginning of the year. So even if I got breaking balls like over the middle of the plate, I would still swing and not just be committed to what I'm looking for, if that makes sense. So just kind of refining my approach and kind of making a little more specific on what I'm looking for has really helped me, especially early in counts. You can get yourself out really easy if you're not looking for certain pitches early in counts. So just kind of focusing on that has really helped me.
Now, I would gather that when you're on a streak like that, pitchers are trying to do all kinds of adjustments on their own to get you out. It doesn't seem like it's working for them, though.
Not right. I mean, hopefully I can keep doing it that way, but it's more to just sticking to my approach and not trying to get them off my game.
Coming into a league like the American Association, I know you had a year in the Pioneer League. Do you find that you are able to get it like a read on pitchers? You have some kind of book on how they pitch you or what their types of pitches are? Or do you just constantly worry about your own approach first?
I think I'm more focused on like what I'm trying to do, and then obviously at bat to bat, I kind of see what they're trying to do. Lately, they've been trying to pitch me in a little bit more. So just trying to understand what they're trying to do and kind of counteract it. But obviously, when I get my pitches in my zone that I want to drive, not missing them is a big thing. So yeah, it's a little bit of both. Being able to be flexible and adjusting from at bat to bat is probably, you know, it's a big thing in this game because I can't just sit there and keep doing what is good for me when they're trying to get me out too. So just understanding their mentality and what they're trying to do to me, and then just adjusting off that.
You know, Luke, I think one of the most impressive parts about this streak is you're still out there catching the vast majority of times. I know Brett has played you at first base some, but I mean, that's got to be kind of draining on your knees going behind the plate most nights there, but you're still figuring out a way to continue to get on base each night.
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing whatever, you know, Skip needs me to do. Brett's an awesome guy to play for, so, you know, just being in constant communication with him on how I'm feeling, how it's going, but I'll do whatever he needs me to do. I played third at the beginning of the year, you know, played a little bit at first, but mainly catching. This is my first year, actually, in pro ball. Well, second-ish. Last year, I DH'd and caught kind of half and half, but this year, I'm just mainly catching, so I think at the beginning it was a little more draining on me, but as I got, you know, my legs back under me and got into the groove of it, I think it's become a lot easier for me to catch, you know, 2 to 4 games in a row and then DH if I have to or go play first. It's just kind of that learning curve and, you know, getting your legs back underneath you.
How exciting for you is it to be a University of Nebraska grad and there you are playing right across the road there from the stadium?
Yeah, it's very comfortable, that's for sure. I definitely know the lay of the land. Love Lincoln as a city. A lot of things to do downtown. Good downtown life, good people around, good fans. I mean, they we're their professional baseball team, like as in the college too. So they really take pride in the sports they love, and they show out for sure.
Do you have people who recognize you from you know, your days at the University of Nebraska coming out and go, man, we saw you play as a college kid. Now you're out here playing professional ball for the Salt Dogs.
Oh, yeah. I think a couple weeks ago, I just had a kid who took a picture with me in college, took another, like, selfie with me. And it was kind of like a couple year down the road thing. So that was kind of cool to see. But, yeah, I definitely have some people who notice me and, like, say some things about how they watch me in college ball, which is really cool to see. Like, I love that community. Lincoln's a great baseball, actually sports community in general. They go crazy about their football and volleyball there, too. But it's a good sports community and good fans.
Now, and I'm curious, Kevin lives in Faribault, and I was up there in the Twin Cities area for quite a while. What led you from Waconia down there to Lincoln to go to school?
Yeah, I mean, I went to school at Chaska, so kind of my two options. It was weird. I grew up in a baseball facility, and the guy who owns it, his name was Sean Wooten. He won a World Series with Darren Erstad in 01 or 02, whenever they won it. So that was kind of my into Nebraska. And then they came and watched me my junior summer going into my senior year and kind of liked me. And they just wanted me to catch, and that's what I really wanted to do. But that was kind of my best offer, and just it clicked. I love that coaching staff with Coach Erstad, Ted Silva, and Mike Kirby were the other two assistants there. So just getting along with them and just having a good vibe really led me to Lincoln. Obviously, I went to a football game on my official, and you can't beat those fans. Like, seeing that atmosphere is really, really cool. I was just lucky that I got a chance to go play there and, you know, got the opportunity to start my freshman year, and kind of the rest is history.
So Big Ten school, you like the least. Who's the worst team out there, Big Ten-wise, for you?
Big Ten-wise? Well, I guess I have to say, I mean, I have a lot of respect for Rick Heller and his program at Iowa, but I'd just say, like, the rivalry-wise, we're taught very, very early on not to like Iowa. So that one, you can say that. But it's more just because of the rivalry aspect. Those guys are always, it's a good program. They're hardworking. I mean, they're scrappy, but just the rivalry-wise, we're taught not to like Iowa really early.
Now, what I found kind of interesting was you come out to Grand Junction in 2021. The Mariners organization gave you, like, five at-bats, it seemed like, and really didn't give you much of an opportunity for you to continue on in affiliate ball. What was that experience like for you, and kind of how do you keep yourself motivated after they really didn't give you much of a shot, it looked like?
Yeah, I mean, I came off a hamate bone surgery, too, at the end of March. I had it. So I was kind of still recovering from everything when I got the call. Went down there and actually got COVID right away. So I was in a 10-day isolation there in the hotel room before I even signed, with no rehab, no nothing. And it was just kind of a weird situation for me. And I came back, signed in the middle of May, and was in rookie ball for about a month and a half. And I mean, I never really recovered fully. It was kind of tough, just the whole circumstance. I mean, I played once a week, but it was still really fun. I learned a lot working with the catching coordinator, Zach Livingston, and, you know, like, it was good people around there. It just didn't work out how I wanted it to. And then I went on the developmental list for a month in AAA with the Tacoma Rainiers. I joined the team in July 4th, and they got released August 1st. And then, I mean, it's just, I kind of always roll with the punches. Like, I'm always just trying to do what I can do to get better, you know, every day. So no matter the circumstances, like, it's still not an excuse for me to just kind of pack it in. So I definitely wanted to learn from all the people I was around, and it was cool being in a AAA atmosphere, you know, learning from those guys and just seeing how they go about their business and just learning how a locker room goes. And kind of I brought that back to Lincoln when I signed with them kind of around August 12th, kind of in that 11th, in that area. And you know, I had a good end of the season and made the playoffs. So just kind of learn as I go, no matter where I am. Just be open to learning, open to other people's suggestions, and just kind of take it all in.
Was it the relationship you had with the community there in Lincoln that led you to come to the Salt Dogs last year? What made that selection process for you?
Yeah, so I had a buddy on the team that I played summer ball with in St. Cloud in 2020 during the COVID year, Garrett Delano, and he was pitching there, and I kind of reached out to him too, and he gave his number to TJ Zerowitz, and kind of they hit me up, and just it kind of went from there. I kind of had a couple of the other teams hit me up to come play for them too, but honestly, Lincoln's a really good spot for me. I always call it my second home. So going to a familiar place, you know, being around, like, I'm still in contact with the coaches, that staff at the University of Nebraska. So just being around people that I can talk to and I trust and, like, in an area I'm familiar with was a pretty no-brainer for me to go back to Lincoln.
Now, you came to the Salt Dogs last season, put up great offensive numbers. This year, you're putting up huge offensive numbers again. I would gather that would draw you some attention. I don't understand affiliate ball a lot of times on how they choose guys. But are you hearing anything about where you might be or if some affiliate clubs are scouting you right now?
No, I haven't heard too much. Honestly, I'm just trying to keep my head down and keep working. I always think that everything will kind of play out how it's supposed to. You know, all I can do is just keep grinding, keep working, and, you know, focus on trying to get into the playoffs here, honestly. Like, we're in a tight race here in the West Division, so we're just trying to keep winning games and try to get in the playoffs again because that's been our goal from the beginning. But this team's awesome to be around. The staff's awesome. Brett Jody, Adam Donahue, and TJ Zerowitz. It's just a really fun environment to be around, so I enjoy being here.
Let's talk a little bit about being behind the plate catching guys because, you know, I think in sports there's no relationship that requires greater trust than between a pitcher and a catcher. So how do you build that trust with your staff?
It starts early. Just kind of understanding what their strengths are and what they're trying to do, right? I mean, we can all game plan as catchers and, you know, even as a staff to try to go about guys, but a lot of the time it's about trusting their strengths too and knowing what they want to do in certain situations. So just kind of getting familiar with them and how their ball moves and, you know, what they like to go when they're ahead of the count or behind the count, just kind of getting that familiarity. And a lot of it just comes from catching their bullpens or seeing them in games. Like a lot of the bullpen guys will throw before the game. So just making sure you're on cue with them and asking them questions with what they're trying to do and what their plans are a big way to get, you know, build those relationships with the pitching staff.
What's that like for you? You know, you have guys who are first, second-year pros, then you got a guy like David Holmberg who's played Major League Baseball. What's that like for you trying to catch games like that?
It's awesome. I mean, Holmberg's a great guy. Learning from him, just hearing his stories, too, and how he tries to go about his business. It's fun to learn from guys who have a lot of experience, right? You can't be naive and think you're better than anyone. Like, be open to learning from those guys because obviously they've played a lot of baseball. So, you know, he has more of a different approach than a lot of guys. Like, and so calling a game for him at first, I think the first game I had with him, he shook me up like, oh, I don't know, so many times. Like, during at bats, he shook me 3-4 times and just kind of getting the connection now, like what he's trying to do and just make it easier for him so he doesn't have to, you know, ice his neck after the game. But just figuring out, like, what they're trying to do and just going from there.
Does he kind of laugh with you after that game? Just kind of like, okay, let's get on the same page here kind of thing.
Oh, absolutely. I make the joke, too, because I hate when they shake all the time, too. I try to be in their minds and know what they're trying to do. So when they shake me off so many times, I feel bad for them because they got to get an ice pack for their neck every time. Make that joke in the dugout.
No, I think a lot of people are kind of interested about the struggles of the late inning guys for Lincoln this season. You know, you're the guy behind the plate. Do you have any kind of insight on what might be a little bit of the challenge for these guys at this point?
I mean, we've had a couple bad breaks, too. I mean, there's been a lot of soft contact hits that just things haven't been really going our way. So the biggest thing is just making sure we have all the trust in those guys to keep rolling them out and keep giving them the ball in big situations, you know, high leverage situations. Really nothing. I mean, it's just how the game goes. Sometimes you go through those slumps, but we have all the trust in those guys in the back end of the bullpen to, you know, do their job, come out and, you know, trust their good stuff that they have.
You know, Luke, one of the things I think that is really great about this team, I think a lot of people approaching the season thought that offense would be a real challenge for the Salt Dogs, but you guys are really one of the more solid teams offensively out there. When you guys go into games, how do you feel as an offensive group out there as you're facing different opponents on a regular basis?
Yeah, we have the mindset. We have a banger lineup for sure, 1 through 9. So, I mean, having the mindset of, like, if we go down 3 to 5 runs, you know, in a game, we're never out of it because we always can just explode that one inning. So, just trusting the guys that we have, right? Like, we've put up some big numbers, and we have a lot of guys swinging super well. So, we just need to keep putting it together as a team and, you know, keep rolling these wins out and try to keep winning ball games, man. It's getting to crunch time. And the race is getting pretty tight. So the more we can do is just win some games and, you know, keep doing what we're doing as an offense and keep putting up runs, I mean, the better we'll be.
You know, I have to tell you that one of my favorite guys in sports is Nate Sampson, quite a character. So what's your relationship like with him? Is he kind of a zany guy in the locker room?
Oh, yeah, Nate's a super vocal guy in the locker room. He's the type of guy that'll tell you how it is, right? And I respect the hell out of that guy. Just hearing his stories, you know, how many years of baseball he's played, he's seen it all, man. Gone to winter ball, been in affiliated, been grinding in independent ball. So I have a really good relationship with Nate. You know, I try to talk to him as much as I can. That guy's awesome. Can't say enough good things about him, and, you know, good leader in the locker room that everyone can go talk to about, you know, their situation or, you know, what they need to improve on, kind of things like that. Like, Nate will just tell you how it is. He's a man.
You know, I would gather that your time there in Lincoln as a student, guys are coming to you for, hey, where's the best place to eat or the best place to kind of hang out or whatever. So give me a little insight. And what's your favorite place to go to when in Lincoln to get a great meal?
There's a lot of places. I mean, Laszlo's downtown is really good. El Potrero is like a Mexican spot down the Haymarket. I don't know. Those are kind of the two places I go. And there's a lot of bars down there too. But yeah, I get that question a lot, actually, like just what they're looking for. There's some Hero 88 sushi down there too. So, you know, whatever the guys are looking for. But I'm a big Mexican food guy. I like Mexican food and I like barbecue food. So you can kind of find it all down there. It's a good vibe.
What's your favorite barbecue place then?
Ooh, Hog Wild was out there. It was a really good place down off West O. That's where I used to went. I don't know if it's still there, but that's kind of where I went. That place was awesome. I love barbecue.
Yeah, beef, pork, what's our favorite barbecue?
Oh, I would probably just say ribs, honestly. Ribs and burnt ends. You know, can't go wrong with either of them. I'll take all kinds. Pulled pork, brisket, all of it's really good. But if I can just go classic ribs with some cornbread, I'm good to go.
Now, fun career there at being a Cornhusker there for a few seasons. Do you have a personal highlight from your college career that stands out to you? Or many, if you want to tell me about a few more.
My freshman year, you know, we played in Minnesota my freshman year, and I kind of went off, hit a couple doubles, hit a homer against them, too. And, you know, the kind of the running joke the rest of the time, every time we played Minnesota, they called me Minnesota Roscoe because I would just show up against them. So always just playing against my hometown team, I think, was kind of one of my biggest memories, you know, freshman year, again, being able to start and play against your hometown team and showing up against them is always a good feeling. And then, obviously, the two Big Ten championships we won. My freshman year in Penn State, we clinched in 2017, and then 2021, we went 4-0 in Indiana pod, closed out against Ohio State to win the Big Ten championship. But obviously made a big run to play against Arkansas, make it to a regional final, which is the longest we went on playoff in a good amount of years. So, you know, those kind of memories stick out to me the most. That 2021 group was really special, you know, after coming off the COVID stuff and playing a Big Ten only schedule and kind of getting a little bit disrespected by being the top two seed and going to play, the last two seed and going to play against Arkansas at their place. So, don't know. There's a lot of good memories, but I think those are the ones that kind of stick out the most.
You know, you had a huge offensive season your senior year, too. A very solid junior year in the brief time until the COVID hit there. But what do you do to kind of keep yourself in shape when you're really not allowed to go anywhere for a while?
Yeah, that was a weird time. I don't know. It was just kind of train when you can, I think, was kind of the motto. And then I was lucky enough to go play summer ball in 2020 with the St. Cloud Rocks. So, you know, just doing what I can to get some games in and get some reps in. And then came back for 2021. It was still pretty sparse of what we could do and, like, you know, kind of being around your own team and not intermingling with the other sports. So, I don't know. It was a weird time. It made us a really close team, and I'm a big advocate for, like, the better chemistry you have on a team, the better the team is, because you're pulling for, you know, the guys around you and not playing for yourself. So, I've learned a lot from, you know, those years and then coming into pro ball, and it's just trying to keep that same attitude of, you know, trying to make good relationships with people and, you know, rooting for other people so you're not just, you know, being selfish or thinking you're alone all the time. It's a lot easier in a group than it is by yourself.
Well, let's talk about this season with me a little bit, Luke. Third place right now in the division, just a little bit behind Sioux City, a team that you guys have played very well against. So tell me, where does this team standing on Labor Day when the season comes to an end?
Hopefully we're playing. I mean, that's all we're trying to – that's our goal, man. Like, try to keep playing into the playoffs. We got a couple big series coming up, starting here in Winnipeg. Obviously, just trying to take care of our business here and, you know, get back on that winning footstep. But, yeah, we got some big series coming up. We play Kansas City, I think, two more times down the stretch. We play Fargo four more times. And then we got Sioux Falls at their place one more time. So there's a lot of games left in our division that we need to take care of and, you know, not get complacent. I know we're in a decent spot right now, but you can never get complacent enough or too comfortable. Just keep going and keep trying to win these bowl games.
You guys had a big run about 30 days ago when the team was just unbelievably hot. Now you're on this hot streak in terms of being at the plate. Do you feel like, you know, the best baseball is ahead for this team, or, you know, how are you guys feeling about your productivity right now?
Yeah, I mean, I you could say we had a little bit of a rough patch here this past weekend, Lake Country, you know, getting walked off the first night and then shutting them out Saturday and then us getting shut out Sunday. So it's kind of been up and down lately. Just getting back to what we're doing, you know, having that confidence, you know, coming out every day and playing and just kind of taking care of business. Obviously, we have a really talented club pitching-wise and hitting-wise. So just kind of putting it all together and just doing the best we can.
I know last season coming into the playoffs, just a team that looked tired. You know, you guys were just, you know, trying to piece together just to get into the playoffs altogether, and then you wind up facing Kansas City right off. You look like a different club this season. Do you guys feel like this is a different team than what was, you know, on the field September 5th last year?
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot new personnel, that's for sure. I mean, a little more on the position player side, our staff. Our bullpen's been pretty solid, and we brought a lot of those guys back. But, yeah, it's a different team for sure. I felt like we were kind of reeling at the end of the year just to get in. Like, we went on that insane run, like, Grant won 8 out of our last 10 or something like that. It was a crazy number that we won just to get into the playoffs. And, you know, playing Sioux City on game 100, to the winner gets in the playoffs. We always talk about the last 2 years for this club. It's gone down to game 100 to get in the playoffs. So we're trying to take care of business before that. So, you know, maybe we can relax a little bit more instead of grinding it all the way to the end. But, yeah, we have a good outset or a good mindset. And, you know, we're just trying to finish out August strong and getting into the playoffs.
Well, Luke, I appreciate you joining me, but I should let you know, so the guests always get a chance to give me a final thought. So whatever you'd like to talk about, the floor is yours.
Final thought. I'm not much of a big talker. I mean, just keep doing what you guys love and, you know, whatever you enjoy, don't let anyone tell you different. You know, put your all in the things you enjoy, and yeah, that's about it.
Love it. Luke Roskin, thanks for joining me this week.
Appreciate you, man.
Once again, I want to thank Luke Roskin for joining me here. fantastic to have the Lincoln Salt Dogs catcher with me here today. And before I bring Kevin back in here into the show, I want to give a little update on our player and pitcher of the week. Again, Kevin and I recorded our part of this of the show on Sunday evening, and so player and pitcher not named until Monday. Justin Wylie from the Kansas City Monarchs chosen as the top player by us. A fantastic week for him. A couple of guys really were in contention for this, but Justin Wylie tied for the league lead in home runs with four, hit 429, 10 runs scored, 8 RBI. Just a great week for the infielder for Kansas City, well-deserving of this particular award. The King County Cougars' C.J. Eldred, chosen as the pitcher of the week by us, what a phenomenal week for him. He continued that scoreless run where he had not allowed an earned run in over 30 innings, tossing six shutout innings against Lincoln. Then on Friday night, he was holding a perfect game bid into the ninth inning until Elmer Reyes led off to frame with a base hit, breaking up the no-hit bid. Unfortunately, lost the shutout bid for himself later on in that inning when Cleburne rallied to tie the score at one, forcing extra innings. But fantastic performance by Eldred. Second straight week he's chosen as the pitcher of the week, and well-deserving. Fantastic performance by him. So now we're going to turn this over to Kevin. Well, we're going to be doing three segments here with us for the show this week, because we're going to have Luke Roskam on tomorrow night when Kevin and I have an opportunity to get him on the show here. Kevin and I recording this segment here tonight on Sunday evening here, breaking out stuff that's gone over in the past week. So, Kevin, before diving into talking about the teams individually, let's just first of all talk about a few things going on around the league. First of all, Jack Michaels, nice little feature that they had about him up in the Fargo-Moorhead area. I don't know if you had a chance to see that, but we got to learn how Track It Down Marge came to be.
That was a very well-written piece, I thought, by Eric Peterson of the Fargo Forum. Came out like 2-3 weeks ago, and they gave the genesis of the Track It Down Marge call because John Dietrich, who had recently passed away, I believe we talked about it extensively on the show lately, was telling Jack that you need to have some kind of a home run call that is distinctively yours. And Jack had a dream that his mom was chasing down a home run ball of his, and just as simple as that, Track It Down Marge became his patented call. And I guess Marge was at Newman Outdoor Field over the weekend, too.
Well, right on. We like that. One of the most signature parts of American Association. Everybody knows that call, so fun to be able to listen to that. I mentioned this last week, Kevin, but Tom Baith, our good buddy out there, got his 150th win as a manager last week, Sunday. And, Tom was one of those guys we were surprised that he wasn't chosen by one of the teams in the American Association, but he's proven to be the real deal over there for the Washington Wildlings.
He seems to have found his niche out there, and he's established the Wild Things as a very good ran baseball team, much like the Winnipeg Goldeyes were when he was working as Rick Forney's right-hand man.
All right, well, Kevin, let's dive into stuff going on around the American Association, and we're going to begin with just the standings themselves for a moment, Kevin, before we talk about power rankings and where everybody stands. I mean, it looks pretty clear right now. Barring some major injuries or signings or something like that, Milwaukee looks pretty solid. But boy, and you could say that, I guess, for Kansas City as well. But, you know, 2 through 6, I think it's pretty open game right now. And especially a lot of, close jockeying, a game and a half between 2nd and 5th in the East Division, 5 games between 2nd and 5th in the West Division. Man, this should make for a very exciting 4 weeks left to the season here.
I would even, I would narrow down just saying the 2 through 5 in both divisions, because I'm not seeing anything out of Gary, South Shore, nor Winnipeg that's given me much faith that either one is going to be a factor in the race. So I would narrow down to the 4 teams in each of the divisions, but it's going to, we're at the, we're at the 3/4 way through the season right now, so you're looking at only 25 games left and four teams battling for three playoff spots in each division. I mean, how can you ask for much more?
Well, Kevin, let's start at the bottom team in the power rankings, the Winnipeg Gold Eyes. Basically, you know, on top of the water right now. Not particularly looking good for this club. 2-8 in their last 10. Did get one of the three games against the Kansas City Monarchs over the weekend, but blew one of those games on Friday night. It looked like they had an opportunity to get a victory out of that, too, and let that one get away from them late. It just seems, Kevin, you know, kind of the old story. You get some good pitching, but the offense doesn't deliver for you, and then when you get some offense, your pitching doesn't hold up for you right now, and it's just, you know, beyond Max Murphy right now, you just don't know what you're getting out of the Winnipeg Gold Eyes.
It was a seven-game week for them this week, and they only managed to call one victory out of that. And you had to know that not only was it going to be difficult going to Kansas City, but you played a 5:30 game on Monday afternoon and then had to hop on the bus. And I believe they got into Kansas City early afternoon on Tuesday. Well, the result was rather predictable as they lost 14-3. And the Gold Eyes, it just seemed like it never really got on track. They played more competitively on Friday and Sunday and did actually get a win on Saturday. But that's a tough situation for a team to go into.
You know, Kevin, we talked about a couple weeks ago about Winnipeg having some opportunity to make a run, but boy, they had such an incredible schedule coming up there with Fargo coming to town, then they travel on for six games in Kansas City, come away with one out of that. Now they're going to have a hot Lincoln team coming to town before Fargo comes back to town against this club. You know, I'm thinking a 1-5 week for this team, and their season realistically may be over at that point.
It could very well be if they keep sliding like that. Granted, Fargo Moorhead's had issues of their own, and Lincoln we still don't really seem to get a good read on. But there's just really nothing with this Gold Eyes team right now that just tells me that there's hope. I hate to be blunt like that, but, I mean, outside of Max Murphy, what's this team you have going for it right now?
In 11th in the rankings, the Gary South Shore Railcats, Kevin, five games behind Lake Country for fourth in the East Division, 12.5 games out behind Milwaukee. They go 5-5 over their last 10 contests and had a fairly reputable, solid performance against Sioux City over the weekend, splitting the doubleheader today. So they get coming away with one victory out of that contest. But this is a team, I you know, we say this almost every week, so I apologize for sounding redundant here, but I really just don't know what's going on in Gary, to be honest with you. Now I see today, yesterday, they cut Victor Nova, that he was released, a guy who's been a kind of a big fixture for them over the last few seasons. And it just seems to me that Lamar Rogers is just grasping for, for any straw he can find to try to turn this team around.
And when you look at the three-game set with Sioux City, the only game that they had any offense going in was the first game of the doubleheader today where they put up five runs and won comfortably by their standards 5-2. Earlier in the week, they did get 2 out of 3 against Sioux Falls, but I just don't see this team as capable of putting a run together that's going to put them in the top four in the East Division.
A guy you like a lot, Kevin, talked about it a little bit in a recent power rankings, LG Castillo with a big three-run homer today. A guy kind of living in oblivion, I feel like sometimes. Nobody's really talking about this guy, but at least he gives this Gary team a pretty solid outfield with Jesus Mariaga joining into that group, and Will Decker has played pretty well for them since he joined. Then you got Gio Diaz in the infield, you know, up scoring runs and stealing bases. I mean, there is the makings of a pretty solid batting order here.
But within that, now we're at the 3/4 through the season. At what point do you figure out that You know, maybe it's not happening this year, and you try to deal some of the good parts you have to try to get a jump start on next season. That's going to be the question the Royal Cats are going to have to face within the next week or two.
Sioux Falls Canaries, number 10 in the power rankings this week, Kevin. 34-41, they are 3 games behind the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks for 4th place in this division. For 4th place, yeah, I said it right. 5-5 in their last 10. Sioux Falls has a fairly interesting week, as you mentioned, Kevin. They lost 2 out of 3 to the Gary South Shore Railcats, then go to Fargo and take 2 out of 3. I mean, you don't want to really, guys, look at the negative. Taking 2 out of 3 in Fargo, you're going to feel this team, I mean, that's the team you're chasing, so that was a pretty big victory for them.
The doubleheader sweep on Sunday, I believe, saved their season because, you know, as I wrote in the blog, if they would have dropped that doubleheader, they would have been 7 games behind Fargo-Moorhead. Now you're only 3 because you won both halves of the doubleheader. I guess that's what we used to describe in hockey as a 4-point game where you're picking up 2 points and the other team's losing 2 points. Well, that's a big swing when you can win a doubleheader against a team that you're chasing down in. And now you have to feel like there's room for optimism as you're only 3 games behind Fargo-Moorhead and also only 3.5 behind Lincoln. So if I'm Sioux Falls, I've got to feel pretty good about myself. And so I think the big test will be this week as they welcome Kane County to town. And that is followed by, drumroll please, 3 games against Milwaukee. So yeah, the hottest team in the East and the best team in the East coming in for your 6-game homestand. So it's not going to get any easier for Sioux Falls, but at least today it was probably a pretty confidence boost.
You know, one thing you have to like about this team from this past week, Kevin, and they only went 3-3. I get that. But all 6 of those games were out on the road, and this club still hit .306, and that's usually been the big thing for them. Great numbers at home, not really big numbers back out on the road, but got a good performance, you know, out of the club. Hunter Clannon with 4 stolen bases this past week for them. I think if you're a Sioux Falls fan, you got to really be kind of hanging your hat on this team now, maybe be able to produce some offense even when they're out on the road, and that's the big thing that they need if they're going to keep winning games.
Not only that, but the pitching has been very good at times. They got 2 very good starts out of Seth Miller this week with the win in Gary, and then I believe he threw 5 innings in the second game of the doubleheader today. So, you know, you know how many times have I said on the show where, you know, they have the offense, but it's just a matter of just finding enough young arms that can get some guys out there, and maybe something good can happen with this ball club.
And we should add Charlie Hasty with saves in both ends of that doubleheader today. So, now leading the league with 18 now, I believe, is where we're at here. The Cleburne Railroaders, Kevin, in 9th in the standings. Cleburne overall here this season is 37-38. All of a sudden, Kevin, out of the playoff picture, a drop to 5th in this division, half game behind the Lake Country Dockhounds. But, man, I'm just a team that you would think now got Jose Sermo back from Mexico and think, okay, Ryan Hernandez came back. The offense looks like it's in good shape. But didn't get a particularly masterful performance offensively this week. And, you know, a couple games they did very well, but I'm just a little bit perplexed on how they've been performing lately.
Well, this week they also faced a very tough Kane County pitching staff, too. And as we know in that ballpark, it's not conducive to scoring a ton of runs as it is. And Cleburne has been relying a lot on the long ball, and that's Northwest Medicine Field's just not a place you're going to get it. So if you're going to do an autopsy of this Cleburne ball club right now, I would not base it on the results of this week.
Yeah,
but
2 home
runs. It's going to be a gigantic series this week as Lake Country goes down to Cleburne.
Just 2 home runs, as Kevin was mentioning, for the team out there. one guy I really love him. You know, I mean, it's great that you got in Jose Sermo and you get Ryan Hernandez back. That's huge for this team. But this Brett Boswell, Kevin, I'm really liking the way this he just seems to fit very well into this team right now, and is putting up solid numbers. You know, get back in their own ballpark. This could be a team that could average easily 8-9 runs a game.
Yeah, it's not all power with this ball club. You got guys like Boswell and Klein and Brothers that can get on base and be table setters for the big boppers too, and that just makes for a really, really good combination.
Nick Gardewine's struggling a little bit recently, though, Kevin. Looked like the team had kind of turned away from him to close out one game recently. Any thoughts, if you're looking at this, that maybe they've overworked him a little bit since returning back to the team, and they want to kind of lighten his load for right now, possibly?
I don't think it'd be the worst idea. Michael Krause has been really good out of the bullpen since he's came back, too, so maybe it becomes a situation where you flip those two around for a little bit and try to get Gardewine back to where we know he can be at.
You know, Kevin, we'll jump to the number 18 here, and you and I talk about surprise teams that have disappointed. I got to admit, this Fargo-Moorhead Redhawk team looked like, at the start of the season, they were just going to run away with the top record in this league. Now, this team is just struggling offensively right now, struggling to win games, 4-6 in their last 10. Dropped to fourth in this division. I find that just stunning right now. And I'm wondering if the Redhawks have kind of flipped a wing here or something. This team looking like they're just struggling to try to get soaring here.
Well, right now this club is also a walk-in triage unit. And it was a tough goal for them, especially this week in Sioux City, where they just could not get much of anything going offensively. I don't know how many times we've talked on the show on not having John Silviano in the lineup has hurt them. Correll Prime, I just don't feel like he's the dominant player he once was. And I think, too, that we want to really look back. I think losing Dylan Thomas, I don't think they've rebounded from that either. Then throw on top of that all the injuries with a lot of the regulars, and it's just a really tough go for this team right now. You look at the positives, a guy like Nick Novak, who was a role player this year, has become a regular and has already set a career high for home runs with 8. So I wouldn't count this team out, but boy, right now this team just really needs to get healthy, especially on the pitching side, where sounds like they've lost Jake Dykoff for the rest of the season, too. Tyler Grauer came back from tweaking his elbow in Winnipeg, threw 5 innings today, gave up 5 runs. So the results probably not where they want them. So the rotation right now, only Correll Prime and Kevin McGovern are left from the opening day staff. So there are some pieces in the bullpen to work with. But like I said, this team just probably needs to find a batter or two out there in the free agent market, but also just needs to get healthy, as I think there's some guys playing pretty banged up right now.
You know, I think the bullpen is the interesting story for this team right now, Kevin, because I still don't think we know exactly who's closing out games for them. They do get Tasker Strobel that they signed, which was a huge addition to this team, I think. And then Garrett Alexander looked like he was going to get a shot at closing out games for them. So, I mean, it looks like they're still trying to figure out everybody's role at this particular moment. And when you're in a situation like that, especially these kind of bullpen by committee things, they don't always seem to work very well. It seems like that's kind of a sign that a team's in a little bit of some trouble there.
I think the ninth inning is going to still fall upon Raz Aliaziz, who's been really good in the role, but you know, lately there just hasn't been many safe situations for him to come in. And with the way the starting pitching staff is, it looks like, you know, they're going to use Trey Cumbie for relief. Now it sounds like, you know, Cumbie started game 2 of the doubleheader, looked pretty good today. So I think they need to settle on their 5 starters, and then they can worry about trying to line up the pieces in the bullpen.
Very interesting week for them, Kevin, as Sioux City comes to town for three, then they travel to Winnipeg for three. Yeah, I feel like just as kind of a boost to this club, they need to come away with at least a 4-2 week kind of thing, just to say, hey, things are okay here, and we're gonna be okay come playoff time.
You know, even like Kevin McGovern was shaky in his last outing, though. I will say, I was in Sioux City for the game, and it was very muggy that night, just really uncomfortable, and it just didn't seem like McGovern was comfortable on the mound most of the night, but he had to eat innings because there was such a long game the night before that the Fargo-Moorhead bullpen was pretty thin, so they still had it. He still had a gut like five innings out of the night.
We jump to the Lake Country Dachshunds, seventh in the standings this week. They are currently in fourth place in the East Division, 7.5 behind Milwaukee, holding a half game lead over Cleburne, just one game behind Chicago for second place in this division, and a half game behind Kane County for third. I got to tell you, Kevin, I'm loving the job that ownership and Ken Huckabee are doing. They're just really find ways to come up with guys that just seem to fit this club and help to get this offense going. And this Merrick Chalup, I hope I'm saying that right. Man, what a nice find this guy has. Chalup, okay, excuse me. What a nice find he's been.
I did not know that today, by the way.
Curtis Terry hasn't had a great batting average, but he's clubbing home runs left and right, and it just seems that they're pulling the trigger on the right kind of moves to bolster this club, and it's keeping them in contention.
They're definitely doing it with the bats, you know, hitting 306 of the club. I saw Curtis Terry play a bit in St. Paul last year, and he had tremendous numbers the 2 years before then in the Texas organization. And Terry just never got it going in St. Paul last year. And I can watch Saints games with like a different view than most will. I'm looking at like, okay, who are guys here that may not be in the team's future or any organization's future, but could be beneficial to in the independent team? And I kind of singled out Terry as one of those guys, and he's proved me right thus far in his time with Dachshunds.
Yeah, he's just 10 homers already in just 20 games, driven in 24 runs to this club, 14 runs scored. I think, just to give fans an idea out there, 10 of his 15 hits have been for home runs, two have been for doubles, only hitting .214 right now. But I think the club is, you know, sometimes, Kevin, you and I are old enough to remember guys like Rob Gere and Dave Kingman who would hit 35 or 40 home runs but would hit .220. And sometimes the club will just put up with that thing. They'll just go, hey, look, we're going to get big power numbers, so give us any kind of batting average, and we'll take the home runs and be happy about it, I guess. And that's what Lake Country seems to be doing with Terry.
I think the issue facing this team is going to be in the pitching, where Randall Delgado was becoming the staff ace, and now he was signed, I believe, either by a Taiwan or a Chinese team, but he's no longer in the mix for the Dachshunds. But they've gotten good two starts, including, I believe, a win today from David Richardson, who's relatively new to the ball club, so maybe he's the guy that can step in and get some wins. But you know, I'm sure manager Ken Huckabee will find a way to piece it together and keep the Dachshunds in contention.
Number six in the standings this week, Kevin, the Lincoln Salt Dogs. Lincoln battling to keep themselves near the top in the West Division. They are in third place right now, 6.5 games behind Kansas City, a game and a half behind Sioux City for second place, half game ahead of Fargo to ensure that they're staying in third right now. A team that, man, I know I'm sounding like a broken record on this, but it looks like we're talking about what Fargo's kind of doing their bullpen. I just don't know if Brett Jody has any idea who we can turn to close out games right now and expect that person to deliver. I think they've tried everybody but the guy selling hot dogs right now.
I can't figure it out, because I thought I you know, I did the blog a week before, and I thought that Devin Kahn would be the ninth inning guy, and that R.J. Fuhrer was going to be more of a setup guy for him. But then you look this week, and here comes Stephon Moore with the save. Three scoreless innings in three outings. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe he's just going to keep looking at individual matchups and go from there. I guess if you got more than one guy that's qualified to close the game, it's not the worst problem to have. You know, this team, I was commenting when I was down there, I said I've nicknamed this team the Lincoln Enigmatics because it's just, you just never know what you're going to get out of them. At times the starting pitching looks really good and then the guys aren't hitting and then the other way around. It's a real hard team to get a read on.
Well, one guy you can't get a good read on is Luke Roskin, Kevin. Today extended his consecutive on-base streak to 39 straight games. That's tied for the longest streak in the American Association this season. He's just continued to hit. It's still a crime this guy did not make the All-Star team, but I digress. But just having a phenomenal season for this club. You know, and that's the kind of thing a team can rally around, Kevin, you think, is that when a guy is just on that kind of offensive hot streak, everybody knows he's going to be on base at some point during the game, and you know your offense is going to have a chance to score runs. So with Nate Sampson, you were talking about a couple weeks ago, really coming to life, and Yanni Perez has played very well. It looks like this is a batting order that's going to take care of itself and give you solid production on a regular basis.
It could, but the problem is right now they need to get Connor Panos, Drew Devine, and Nick Anderson going again. All three of those have flatline as of late, and one of the games I was at, Connor Panos was so upset with one of his at-bats, he threw his bat after he popped out the third base, and the umpire perceived it as him protesting a check swing call earlier in the at-bat and threw Panos out of the game. But I just think that just kind of highlights just the struggles that Panos has had since his appearance in the All-Star game. But if you can, like, you get the guys you get just mentioned, if you can get the guys I mentioned clicking with them, it can be a team that can produce some runs. But right now, it's about half the guys producing and half are not.
Number five in the standings this week, Kevin, the Chicago Dogs. They closed out this week 38-36, 6.5 games out in the East Division in second place. You know, Kevin, every season for the last probably 3 years, we've talked about Chicago as the team to beat in their division. This year, you know, I had them sixth when it started. I think both of us saw them as kind of having an off year. I wonder if lower expectations and the fact that Milwaukee seems to be getting all the attention is actually to the benefit of the Chicago club. They just go play baseball and not worry about what people are talking about.
It could be. This team has flown a bit under the radar, and it's been like many others we've talked about tonight, it's just been a hard team to get a read on right now. I know one guy that they picked up, Peyton Eales, has been playing second base for them. He had a big three-run homer the other night in Milwaukee to clinch a game against the Dogs, and has made a good showing for himself thus far with the Dogs in 15 games. So that's been a nice addition to the club. But it's just a matter of getting everybody clicking at the same time. You know, this isn't a team that's going to, outside of Josh Altman and maybe Luke Mangieri, they're not going to get a ton of home runs. So it's going to be guys hitting doubles, taking extra bases, and doing all the little things to produce runs.
Speaking of one of those guys, Kevin, a person that you and I have not talked a lot about, but it really having a very solid season for this team is Jesus Luhano, hitting .308 for the club right now with just two homers, but scored 31 runs in 66 games, has 11 stolen bases. One of those guys you're talking about who helps to keep this offense going and has had some big hits for them recently. You know, with Dylan Rosa joining this club, I still think a move that is going to, that Kansas City is going to regret later on. it looks like they have those kind of pieces that really could get this offense going. And Ryan Lidge, you always know you're going to get good stuff out of it. You're getting a great season from Matt Mulcher. If they could just get one other starter, I think, one other starting pitcher to really come up and step up his game right now, this is a team that can knock some teams off in the playoffs, maybe get themselves in the championship series.
In defense of Kansas City, the Dylan Rosa deal was made because Rosa wanted to be closer to home in Chicago, so that's why that move was made. And, you know, Joe Calfapietra, he will make moves like that to benefit players that are looking for a move such as that. So I don't think it's a mistake necessarily on Kansas City's part.
What's jumped to number four then, Kevin?
Go
ahead. I'm sorry. No, please go ahead.
Well, the point I was going to make is we still need to see consistency out of the starting pitching to, you know, you look at the three starters that have had double-digit starts, and all of them have ERAs in the high fours, and we're just not seeing a shutdown pitcher with this ball club right now, and until we do, it's going to be tough for them to make any serious run at Milwaukee.
Well, the team on a very serious run, Kevin, moving up four spots in the rankings this week. The Sioux City Explorers, fourth overall in the power rankings for this week. 39-36 overall, 5 games behind the Kansas City Monarchs, 7-3 in their last 10. Man, they got a lot of good things going on here for Sioux City right now, starting with this pitching. And you know, pitching is a hallmark for Steve Montgomery, and this group, beyond Salo and Bates, not a lot of guys that you may recognize name-wise, but boy, they are really putting together some solid performances.
Yeah, it seems like the starting pitching has rounded out really nicely for this club, even with I believe they still have like a injured pitcher or two, and they haven't had Kent Hassler for a while, who was dominant out of the bullpen, so even with all that going against them, they're still having a heck of a run as a pitching staff in whole with a 2.56 ERA this week.
Bless you. You know, Kevin, it seems that frequently we're talking about starting pitchers for that pitcher of the year kind of thing, and they seem to dominate the discussion, but I think Sean Rakowski is putting himself in the position to be talked about as the top pitcher in the league this year, not only just because the save total has been solid, his overall ERA is very good for this team, but he had to win a lot of late games for them early on in the year when this club was winning, you know, 3-2 in the 10th or walk-off victories and stuff like that. I got to tell you, I think he deserves serious consideration as the top pitcher in the league so far this year.
Pretty crazy to consider he was. I don't think he was an all-star, was he?
No, he wasn't. No, he was left off the team.
But he's been a guy that Steve Montgomery can go to in the 8th and 9th inning and know that he's in pretty good hands. So that is quite a perk to have, especially on a team like this where it seems like extra innings is a pretty common theme for them.
Yes, it is, and you know you're going to have a lot of very close contests. For example, they beat Gary twice this weekend, 3-2. Okay, scored two runs in the loss that they had to the Railcats. Not a team putting up a lot of runs. They did batter Fargo Moorhead a little bit early out of that series last week, but a lot of close contests. And Sean Rakowski has probably been almost the MVP of the team, if you like the idea of pitchers being the MVP. So, you know, great guy to have on this club. How about the King County Cougars, Kevin? They come in at third in the power rankings this week. King County in third place in the East Division. They are half game behind Chicago for second, 6-4 in their last 10. Hey, anytime you have a pretty solid week against a team like the Cleburne Railroaders with a very good offense, and you come away 3-3, you got to feel pretty good about that as a team looking to have playoff aspirations.
We were wondering what was going to come of this team as they returned home from that highly successful 11-game road trip in which they went 8-3. They had not played all that well at Northwestern Medicine Field this year, but other than a clunker today, the Cougars put together a very good week against a very good Cleburne Railroader team.
And, you know, Kevin, it's been the additions to the lineup for manager George Samus lately that have really come up big. Olivier Basabe has been fantastic. Donovan Williams released from, I believe it was from Winnipeg, if I remember correctly, from Fargo, has been very good for them. Hector Sanchez signed by the club, and he's put some been a big back for this team. But, man, the rich got richer, Kevin, with Nick Belzer joining the team. And I thought, man, this starting staff is really something special.
And the starting staff, I believe, even got a boost by the signing of Hector Sanchez. I just think a guy like Sanchez just makes your pitching staff even better. Not that King County needed the help, but Sanchez has been good thus far for them, hitting .297 and already becoming a leader when it comes to the pitching staff.
You're getting a little bit of disappointing performance out of Jack Fox this week. Tyler Beardsley got hit hard, really hard today. But got C.J. Eldred, Kevin. And talk about a guy having a phenomenal year. Nearly came away with a perfect game last night.
Well, that may have been the game of the year just in general. Because when Kane County finally got a run in the eighth inning, we're thinking possible no-hitter, but then Cleburne did manage to put together a run. But another brilliant outing for Eldred, even though his earned run streak did finally come to an end. But, boy, I don't think you can ask for much more out of Eldred than you have in the last, I believe, his last five starts now. You know, the thing, when I was watching them in King County in the middle of July, Eldred started on a Saturday night, and someone was wondering, well, this might be do or die time for him, and boy, he's done nothing but perform for them. And like you said, I think that's a nice pickup with Nick Belzer to give them one of I honestly believe the best rotation in the entire league. The news out of Kane County though is earlier in the week was Jimmy Kerrigan was released. I've not talked to anybody in Kane County to find out the genesis of the release, whether it was performance-based, if it was retirement-based, or injury-based, but I'm kind of leaning more towards retirement or injury, seeing that nearly a week has gone and nobody has signed Kerrigan, because why would you not give or take a flyer on a guy who was at least our choice for player of the year last year? But even with that, you know, you lose Kerrigan out of your lineup, and it just seems like the offense for Kane County keeps rolling.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see if maybe he was just deciding to call it quits at that point and just kind of hang up the cleats after a season that clearly beneath his standards. And I don't mean that in a negative way, just standards are very high. So he might have just been thinking, hey, it's just time to move on. And we do see that happen. We've seen it happen a few times this season, even when Kane County with T.J. Bennett deciding to do the same thing. So, if you moved on in your career, we tip our caps to you and say, I hope you have great success out there in whatever endeavor you follow.
Well, one more note on Kane County this week. I mean, the games on Friday night and Saturday night between Kane County and Cleburne were just incredible, intense, extra-inning affairs. Kane County getting the best of both games on Friday and Saturday. There was an incident on Saturday night when Gally Cripps did hit the game-winning home run, where when he was between third and home, he was gesturing towards the Cleburne dugout. I'm going to read the tea leaves on this and say that may have been retaliation, because I was watching the inning before, and when Michael Krause got out of a situation to get them to the next inning, Krause was very animated on the mound, and I'm thinking that might have been something that Kane County took offense to, and it was retaliation for that. But you hope that they both got out of their system, because it's becoming a really neat rivalry with two clubs with no geographical connection whatsoever, but they had the playoff series last year that Claiborne knocked off Kane County. Now you had this intense six-game series. I'm really looking forward to the next time these two teams match up, and I'm guessing it may be in the playoffs.
Well, you know, Kevin, we've been around George Samus for a long time, and we know he doesn't like that, what he perceives as kind of rubbing stuff in your face kind of thing. So wouldn't be surprised if he was saying in the dugout, hey, look, we're not standing for that kind of stuff going on around here. So should make for an interesting, if that dynamic holds true, it should be interesting about what that looks like come playoff time. So we'll keep an eye on that. How about the number two team in the power rankings this week, Kevin? Holding the West Division lead right now, the Kansas City Monarchs, 5 games ahead of the Sioux City Explorers, 6-4 in their last 10. A Kansas City team got some outstanding performances out of guys we haven't talked a lot about this season. We're going to start with Justin Wiley, Kevin. He had a very nice weekend with Winnipeg, homering a couple times, drove in some big runs for them. A guy who was an all-star, well-deserving. A guy, again, you and I haven't spent a lot of time talking about, but one of those kind of Joe Calfabietra guys that comes in and puts up big numbers and really gets this team going.
He is a spark plug, and I'll admit I have not watched a lot of the Monarchs this year. But, you know, when I was putting together my all-star team at the halfway point of the year, I looked at Justin Wiley's numbers, and they were indisputable, and rightfully so, he was voted on to the All-Star team. And, you know, much like a guy like Ryan Grosjean was for the teams in the past, I believe Justin Wiley is also that sort of a spark plug for the Monarchs.
Kevin, an interesting dynamic for this team this week. I sort of get leaving staying with Martinson for the four outs and his save opportunity against Sioux City. But they used Patrick Weigel today to record a save. Bobby Rossman got a save for them a couple nights ago. Looks like Joe Calfabietra opening the opportunity for somebody to prove they deserve that closing role. All three guys came through this week. I think that's a very interesting dynamic of this team, because if Joe can count on any one of the three to deliver saves for this team, this Kansas City team became a lot better. That's been kind of the Achilles heel, but that may not be a problem for them anymore.
I don't think Weigel has been the dominant closer that Calfabietra was looking for this year. You know, I'm looking at his pitching log, and as of July 30, he's only had 2 outings in which he's given up a run, but you look at his overall numbers, 4.32 ERA. It's not an ERA you're looking for out of a dominant closer. And I think a more valuable reliever for the team has been Grant Gavin, who's been that bridge between the starters and then the closer role. But the guy you're talking about, Bobby Rossman, former Sioux City Explorer, has come in and got a save. And I guess, you know, at this point, it's probably open auditions to see who he's going to want to go to come September.
Well, I hope it's Rossman, Kevin, because there isn't many times you have on a team a guy named Bobby. He's got to like that right there. Let's go to the number one team, Kevin. The Milwaukee Milkmen, well-deserving in the number one spot. They have the top record in the American Association at 45-30, 5-5 in their last 10, holding a 6.5 game lead over the Chicago Dogs. Pitching staff, Kevin, this was the heart of this team, and they have not been as invincible lately as both Christian Young and Frankie Barteau struggled recently. So, do you have any concerns about what you're seeing out of Milwaukee over the last week or so?
Concerns, no. Interest, yes. I noticed today that Anthony Barone went to Frankie Barteau in a middle relief situation, so that may send you a message there that maybe they're going to look for Bartle to fill a different role for a little while. So we'll see how that pans out. But and looking at the, you know, outside of Mora, it's been pretty average numbers all the pitching staff as of late.
Now, we should say August got underway this last week here. both Kyle Mora from Milwaukee and Brian Torres named as the pitcher and player of the week by us here at America at This Week in the Association. Let's start with Kyle Mora, Kevin, who just had a spectacular month for Milwaukee. With 4-0, ERA that was ridiculously like 1.65, I think is where we were at. Had a lot of just spectacular performances for this team and was the kind of forgotten guy in the starting rotation, but really has been on fire of late for them.
He has, and you know, he did get off to a bit of a slow start too. So and considering that he had not been a consistent starter for the Milkmen, I just think he flew under the radar for a while, but his work as of late has been superb.
Brian Torres named as the top player by us here. Excuse me, Brian tied not only for the most home runs hit in the month, led the league in runs scored, led the league in RBI, second in batting average for the team. Just a guy that, I'd be honest with you, I really just don't understand what major league affiliates are not seeing. I mean, you know, maybe I'm biased for this guy or whatever, but man, I mean, talk about a guy just having a phenomenal season for this club. It looks like he's on his way to his second batting title, Kevin, since joining the league. So I don't get it, but somewhere out there, Brian Torres just not fitting into an organization somewhere.
I don't understand it. I don't know if I brought it up on this show or if I was talking to people in the league or what, but, you know, in watching Triple-A baseball, I'm not seeing where Brian Torres would not fit in. You look at a guy like Roy Morales with the Milkmen last year. Morales had a very good season in Triple-A. I think Torres is an even better for average hitter than Morales. Morales has better power numbers, but Torres is just as good of a hitter, and for some reason he's not getting the look.
25 games left in the season, Kevin. Torres with 53 stolen bases, 9 off the American Association mark for stolen bases in a year. I know Brian wants this record badly. He told me at the All-Star game. How many over 62 do you think he goes?
What's he at right now? 53,
yes.
Okay. And what's the record?
62.
I'd say he's going to hit 70.
I think that's a pretty good call. That's an amazing number in 100 games. I can honestly tell you that. This young man really can run. There's no doubt about it. Well, Kevin, I believe that takes us through our power rankings and stuff going on in the American Association. Last week, I talked about this a little bit. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this, Kevin, because, you know, in previous seasons, you might see 15, 18 guys who were with one club during the season and moved on to another one within the American Association. Boy, this year it seems like a guy's released and he's signed by another club 9 minutes later. You were talking about Jimmy Kerrigan. We were surprised to see him not signed by somebody already. But what do you think is kind of driving that? Is there just not enough talent coming out of minor league organizations to fill those spots? Or teams are just thinking, wow, you passed on that guy too early. It's kind of a stunning thing, I think.
I think it's a lack of guys available. I mean, how does I'm sorry if the Falsetti family is listening in right now, but Mike Falsetti, who hasn't put up really good numbers in our league or the Frontier League, gets signed by Fargo-Moorhead and is in the lineup right away. I don't. You know, as soon as I saw him in the lineup, I'm doing a baseball reference and I'm like, okay, what's going on here? Why is this guy getting an opportunity? And I just don't think there's just that pool of players available, especially, you know, in a specialized position like catching that are available, not like there was before. Falsetti.
Yeah, I think you're right. Go ahead.
I got his. Here's where he's been since he's turned pro. 2015, played for the traveling team in the Frontier League. 2016, split his time between Lake Erie and Gary. In 16 and 17, was a part to halftime player with Sioux Falls. 2018, 58 games with Chicago. 2019, 53 games with Southern Maryland. Does not play in 20 or 21. In 22 games with Southern Maryland. And now this year he's been with Joliet and the Chicago Dogs and now Fargo Moorhead. The only time he hit above 200 was when he hit 210 for Sioux Falls and 205 at bats in 2017.
That's a long time ago. That's a long way to be.
And that's the guy. And that's the guy you're hoping can fill BJ Lopez's shoes until he's healthy again.
Yeah, it is an interesting dynamic in this season. We're going to keep watching because, again, it seems like when you see a school of piranha when a fish is thrown out there in the middle of them, the way they swarm around that. And right now, it seems like anybody who's released by a club, everybody's swarming around that to see if they could fit into their lineup. So, making for some exciting
times. That's why I thought for sure that Kerrigan would have ended up somewhere by the end of the week.
I was a little surprised by that as well. Let's jump around the other leagues here for a moment, Kevin. First of all, starting with the Frontier League, is the Gateway Grizzlies holding a two-game edge over the Schaumburg Boomers in the Western Division, as I think they are just 4 weeks away from their season ending as well. In the East Division, the New Jersey Jackals hold a half-game lead over the Tri-City Valley Cats and the Quebec Capitalis in there. Little notes about some former American Association guys. For those guys, people who might have forgot about Keon Barnum, he is currently seventh in the league in hitting, second in runs batted in, and first in home runs. Keon, always a guy who put up big numbers. But how about Thomas Walgreen?
He better be in that ballpark.
Yes, you're right about that. Thomas Walraven, eighth in runs batted in. And not a guy I thought we thought would be a big run producer, but having a fantastic season out there for the New York Boulders, out there in the league. In the Atlantic League, Kevin, second half standings right now, it is the Southern Maryland Blue Crabs holding a half-game edge over the York Revolution, 17-9 versus York 16-9. And the High Point Rockers, 15-9, hold a one-game edge over the Gastonia Honey Hunters. And Gastonia is still, I guess, fielding a team right now after we heard that they were having a little trouble making payroll. So it's good to see they're still playing ball and not having to forfeit a bunch of games. So, and that's not me trying to mock an Atlantic League team. I'm going to say openly right now, we don't want to see that. Because, you know, Kevin, one of the things we're always concerned about, whenever you hear about partner league teams having trouble, I think it reflects across every partner league, and so we always want to see teams in good financial situation because we don't want to have that reputation spilling out there.
No, because that's the thing the media will grab onto right away, and it just gives a black eye to all of the partner leagues.
Absolutely. We've got to see that go on at times, and we're not going to rehash a bunch of those circumstances or whatever, but I think if there's one thing that can be said about the both of us is that we want to see all teams doing not only well on the field, but financially well out off the field so that there's not missed ranked or whatever the case that goes on, because those kind of things never reflect well on the league. So it seems like in the American Association, any one of those problems have all dissipated. It looks like everybody's pretty stable right now, it seems.
It does. I'm pretty concerned, though. There were a couple of games this week where Kansas City, a major media market with the rebranding with the Monarchs, winning ball clubs consistently, they were outdrawn twice by a much smaller market in Sioux City. Granted, that might be Sioux City stepping up their game a bit and getting some more fans in, but in a market like Kansas City, there is no reason you should be drawing the numbers that they did, especially on Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah, 1841 per game for Kansas City this season, which I believe is what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 7th in the league. That's, you know, for what I think the overall Kansas City area is like 4 million. So that's kind of disappointing numbers out there. King County.
Yeah, somebody that wants to do it. Somebody that wants to do it and has the motivation to do it. Do attendance per capita percentage graph or something like that. Average attendance divided by how many people live in the region of which you should be drawing from. I'd be really curious to see who the best teams are.
Yeah, because King County, they do 8,000 fans yesterday. 5,500 they're averaging per season right now. And how do you work out Chicago with that, though, Kevin? Because, you got King County out there in Geneva, and you got to give Schaumburg kind of some credit over there, too. So it wouldn't really, I guess, be fair to Rosemont or the Chicago area to consider that as well. So I'm not going to have you rule on that right now, but we'll have to figure out how to break that one down later on there. I'm crediting that. I think that sends us through all of the Cardinal League stuff and American Association. So, Kevin, tell us, first of all, what's going on out there at the 10th inning stretch.
Well, I just did the latest power rankings and recapped my visit to Lincoln with I didn't write about it, but I did stop in Sioux City for a couple of days, too, and I'm just about wrote it out by now, but I'm still going to try to get out to Sioux Falls for a couple games this week. But did a recap of my first trip to Lincoln. I greatly enjoyed heading out there. I wish it was health-wise under better circumstances, as I was fighting through a fever on Monday and Tuesday, and the way the humidity was out there, it just wasn't a good place to have those sort of issues, but still enjoyed my time out there. The people were great. Thanks to Michael Dixon for getting everything set up for me and for all the people with the Salt Dogs that took time to talk to me and tell me stuff to do in the area and made sure I had a good time. I thank all of you, and I look forward to making it back.
You're beautiful.
I'll save that.
Give us a thought of the park.
I gave away my shot out there, I guess.
Give us your thought on the park, though.
I really liked it. The park is now 20 years old, so, you know, gradually there are going to be things that are going to start wearing out on it that could use some TLC. But between the University of Nebraska and the Salt Dogs organization, I'm sure they will pound out some sort of agreement on a mutual financial backing of any renovations that would be needed for the ballpark. The playing surface was incredible. I've been told all these years, and obviously all the years where they get the best playing surface of the year award, I guess I just took it for granted, but seeing it in person, it was just unbelievable. And, you know, I like, too, that the ballpark organ is live and it's utilized. You just didn't feel overwhelmed by music like you do in some other ballparks. I'm talking to you, Milwaukee. And they have an over-air radio contract, so I like that. You know, like in some of the markets, you can sit down in the stands, plug the headphones in, and take in the ball game. So it was a throwback to what I enjoy with baseball.
Loving it. Do you want to give us your shout out first, since you sort of gave a little bit of it away?
Sure, I'm going to do this. I want to give a shout out to Jim Bunch. Jim and his daughter were at the ball game on Tuesday night, and I did manage to come down and meet them. They are diehard Lincoln Salt Dog fans, and it was fun to meet them, talking baseball, talking family, talking a few other things. So it's always good to be on the road and meet somebody new.
So I have two shout-outs for this week. First of all, because I didn't mention this already and I needed to, but I did want to give a shout-out, first of all, to Dr. Gay Marie Vaughn, who earned her doctorate degree a few weeks ago. And so congratulations to her, the lovely wife of fantastic Sioux City Explorer broadcaster Dan Vaughn, graduated with her doctorate degree. I know is technically in some type of area of psychology or therapy, but I'm not exactly sure what specific field she got her doctorate in. But I know she's going to be a great success out there. Her and I talked about her doctorate on a couple of instances, and it sounds like it was very good and extensive work to learn. So congratulations to her out there. And I would also like to give a shout-out to Josh Buchholz for my apology for messing up him being on the show this week. I made an error that didn't work this out for him to join. And so thank you for your indulgence and understanding of my personal stupidity that blew that opportunity. So that's my two shout-outs for the week, Kevin, and I think that's all I got for this week.
All right.
That's what I'm talking about. Well, once again, for Kevin Luco, I'm Rob Padere. We'll see you next time on This Week in the Association.